Welcome to Talking Too Loud with Chris Savage. This is a show that's serving up the loudest takes on building businesses, top-notch brands, and amazing products. And I'm here with the one and only Wade Foster, CEO of Zapier. How are you, Wade?
I'm doing great, Chris.
It's been too long since I've seen you, buddy. It's been too long. Before we dig into leadership, longevity, a few other things, I have to ask you the question. What's got you talking too loud?
So I think more and more people are getting smart on this, but certainly the thing that gets me talking too loud is seat-based pricing. I think there is a lot of legacy SaaS vendors, especially public company ones, that keep pushing seat-based pricing, raising their prices left and right, and I think they might be making a little bit more money in the short term, but in the long term, I think it's going to be a scary time because I think we're moving a lot more to usage-based billing. I think the cost of software is getting out of hand, and I think you know, with AI, we're finding actual real alternatives for how to go solve these problems.
Wow, this is a big take here.
I think it's increasingly not that big of a take. Like, I'm finding more and more people going like, yeah, it's a problem.
Well, I mean, I agree, it's a problem.
Yeah.
What do you think people need to think about? Like, if let's do it both sides. Like, big companies who rely on seat-based pricing, what should they do?
Well, I think those folks are kind of have a bit of a, like, innovator's dilemma, especially if you're a public company. Like, if you're a public company, you've got earnings reports to hit every single quarter. Yeah. And I think you kind of just have to have a, you know, a leadership team, CEO that's bold enough to say, you know what, we have to play for the next 5 years, not the next 5 months.
Yeah.
And be willing to say, okay, how do we like preserve some of the revenue, but also figure out a way to shift our business to something that looks a lot different. But I think for startups, this is like a moment in time where they can actually have like real business model invention and undercut folks because they can go chew through margin that these incumbents just don't care about. And they don't have to make as much money on it because they don't need it. They don't have all this, you know, people or infrastructure or costs like that. And so I think it's a real opportunity for companies. And I started noticing it with a lot of these AI vendors where it wasn't AI per se that was causing them to do this, but it was just like, the fact that AI was different enough, I think it created a catalyst to think about other things that should be different too.
Yeah.
And price is one of those ones that, because we haven't, like, it's been seat-based for like a decade.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, maybe it shouldn't be.
Well, I think it's also, I mean, I'm sure you know some of these people too, but like a lot of the mid-sized businesses who rely on seat-based pricing have been having a hard time because like the industry has shrunk, right?
Well, and that's the other bit of it, right? Is they got a little too aggressive with it, where it's like all these layoffs meant that they were losing, you know, their NRR wasn't as good, the businesses are contracting.
Yeah.
And so they're like, oh crap, what do we do?
Yeah.
Raise prices.
Yeah.
And then that just makes it more like, at odds with the customer because like the customer's saying like, no, I don't want to pay you more. I want to pay you less because I don't need it. And now you're basically forcing me. You know, we had a vendor that came in and jammed a 3X price increase down our throat.
Yeah.
And you know, look, we paid him in the short term.
Yeah.
But a year from now,
we're
going to have a new vendor.
Yeah. That's, I think it's really interesting because even evaluating usage-based pricing, like seat-based pricing is like, well, I know how many employees I have or how many I think I'm going to have.
Yeah.
And usage-based pricing can be a little bit harder, I think, to maybe predict.
100%. Yeah. It's like a lot more variable. It's a tougher business model, no doubt.
Yeah.
Like,
By the way, I love this. This is what you're talking too loud about. It makes me so happy. Okay. We're going to go into my prepared questions now.
All right.
What's a future trend in automation that you're most excited about? And how do you see it shaping the way we work?
I mean, the obvious answer is AI.
Yeah.
I think...
is there an aspect of it that you think is going to, like, really change how we work more than others, or no?
Maybe the... So, I'll give the obvious answer and then maybe one that's not so obvious. I think the obvious one is that what it takes to build software is it's basically becoming commoditized building stuff. It's not quite there yet. I think there's a lot of orchestration that still has to happen. It's a little bit nerdy, but give it 2 years and I think it'll be effectively free to like build stuff and most people will be able to do it in some way. I don't think that that's all that atypical, but I think one of the impacts of that is all the like benefits now are going to accrue to folks who are creative, idea people who actually have ideas, which is a little bit counter to what it has been the last 10 years. The 10 years has been like power to folks who are technical. Like
and
when
data.
You and I were starting companies, like you didn't want to be the idea guy. The idea guy was like, oh, please don't. I don't want to be that person. I want to be someone contributing. But now like if the idea guy can actually go build stuff, like the people with the best ideas are going to be the winners. And so I think it's actually like a bull for human creativity
totally.
In the long run.
Yeah. No, it is really exciting, and it is starkly different, right, from what it was. I also think that a lot of people are getting tripped up with their reliance on the quantitative data that they use to make decisions today, where it's like when we're building features and building products, it's like so easy to get too wrapped up in that.
Yep.
When like what you're talking about is like you might need to make connections that no one's made before.
Yeah.
It was interesting. Like, do you follow F1 at all?
Not really.
Okay. Well, anyway, I'm in a segment of F1. Yeah. I love F1.
This is why you're talking too loud.
I'm always talking too loud. But one of the things that is interesting about it is like this massive team like working together, trying to build the absolute best car.
Yeah.
And then they have who they believe they think are the best drivers. And these drivers go out there and compete. And there's this guy who designs F1 cars, Adrian Newey. He just switched teams. And he's designed majority of the teams that have won the championship, whatever. And he was saying, like, what are the mistakes that people make when building products this scale? What's the big mistake? And he said one of the biggest mistakes that people make is that they get too focused on the data that they have access to. And they rely on, like, the AI driving simulator to, like, help them figure out if they have a good car, like the wind tunnel stuff. But the truth is, like, the AI simulator can't feel fear. And so, like, the key difference that he points to is, like, with unlimited data, it's, like, the human being who can feel fear in the moment and can tell you if it's, like, scary to drive this thing or, like how it's turned, all the little details, and that's where you find the margin and that's where you get through. It's just interesting because it's, like, kind of similar to what you're saying in terms of, like, the human being pulling together, who's creative, pulling together the right things that only they would know, like, this taste, this approach, this product, this moment. You know, it's like, it's hard to build in a simulation.
Yeah. It reminds me of that. There's that comic where, someone's bending over, looking on the floor around a lamppost where the light is shining down.
Yeah.
Someone walks over and sees him. Is like, hey, what are you looking for something? I'm like, yeah, I'm looking for my car keys. And they say, where did you drop him? She said, oh, way over there. And she says, well, why are you looking here? It's because this is where the light's on.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, your data is here, but the answer is over here.
I love
that. Not going to see it.
Wow. You've seen Zapier grow from YC to like being a leader in automation. What's one unexpected challenge you faced in scaling that textbooks did not prepare you for?
I mean, that may be a cliche answer, but I do think you can read a lot about people management and leadership. And I mean, it's sort of true, but there's so much that I just learned the hard way.
Yeah.
And like, I think there's a ton of stuff in there that is just atypical. And it's weird because, you know, you go look at like, arguably like some of the three most successful CEOs right now, you could say were, you know, Steve Jobs, Elon Musk, Jensen from NVIDIA.
Yeah.
And all three of those guys run their companies weird. It doesn't make any sense. Like there's things where you're like, no one would tell you to do it that way.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if they're right or wrong, but like, it's interesting that those are the ones that have kind of like, you know, great products, great revenue. You could debate on the culture side, but like...
But they found a way to run their company,
which
is interesting.
And that's certainly not in the textbook. Like no one said, you should do it that way. Like it's weird and different. And I don't know, there's a whole bunch of stuff in that category that I haven't quite totally been able to articulate yet, but it's been very hard.
Is there anything that you guys do that you feel like when you're doing it, it's from a hard won lesson? And I'm talking people management here, it's like a hard won lesson. You're like, you know, we tried the way I thought you were supposed to do it. We tried the best practice and actually found the opposite.
Well, I mean, the obvious one for us was that the remote work thing.
Yeah.
Like, that was the one where, we were atypical from the get-go.
Yeah.
And has worked really, really well for us.
Yeah.
And I think it's because we like came about in a time when it was actually possible to do it.
Yeah.
But most folks hadn't tried yet.
Yeah.
And we built it that way from the ground up. So like we were able to just like instill those principles in from day one. So that's probably like the obvious one that works. I think the hard won lessons are, you know, things that maybe we started with but got away from. Like we were hyper obsessed with like small teams early on. And then, like, there was just areas.
And how you operate yourself?
Internally. We would just have really small teams of two or three working on stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was a period where we started just putting more and more folks on stuff, and things would get slower.
Yeah, it doesn't go faster, does it?
It's like, oh, we need a better person on this. So we put another person on there. And then it got slower still.
Yeah.
And so there was a whole element of, like, oh, how do we create smaller teams that are like loosely coupled, but like highly aligned on like the big mission, but can operate fairly autonomously to go like champion their thing. it's still hard to like totally get that tuned internally. And it's like, you can go across our organization and you can find teams where it's like dialed in and you're like, yeah. And then there's other places where some sort of muck is getting in the way. And it's not always obvious like what the muck is that you kind of gotta fix.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've had a similar experience in terms of like things we figured out early that we didn't understand how unique they were.
Yeah.
And then we tried all the different best practice ways of doing it. Like, uh-oh, like...
We were more right than we thought.
Yeah, and I think that happens a lot. Like, I feel like a lot of startups get traction at a moment. They're doing something that's unique.
How much of it do you think was, you know, you said, like, your like the best way for your company to work. How much of it do you think was, you intuitively knew that that was right, and it was like, it actually was like the best way to run Wistia, but it may not be the best way to run
I think that's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
And I think it's like my co-founder Brett and I, like, we found ways that we loved working.
Yeah.
And it seemed to produce results for us, but sometimes we had trouble explaining them to other people because like they were so different.
I see.
And then we fell away from them when we did normal stuff.
Yeah.
And then like it didn't work and I was like, the normal thing isn't working.
Yeah.
Now yeah, and then it's going back.
Yeah.
And it's been similar, totally. Yeah, yeah. A very shared experience there. Speaking of which, we've both been doing this for a long time.
Yep.
How do you stay in the game?
Well, I'm told you need to get 8 hours of sleep, eat lots of protein, walk every day.
Okay, one more. lift heavy. Yeah. Okay, great.
I think that's the longevity tricks.
Yeah.
You know, I think the quote that's like stuck in my head, my co-founder shared this Quentin Tarantino story, which was the tail end of a long day of shooting. Quentin will say, hey, let's do one more take.
Yeah.
And why do we do it? And the whole crew, because the crew's been with him forever, the whole crew will chant back, because we love making movies. And I think there's an aspect of that, like, you know, you want to do it 13 years, like, you got to love it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think... for me, it's like continuing to find like the part that I love, because like the job is not always fun, but there's a part that's like, that you're just like, this makes it cool. Like, it's interacting with customers, seeing their thing come to life, seeing them get their awesome bit. And then when stuff gets kind of mucked up internally, going like being willing to fight for like the thing I love. It's like, this is what makes it awesome. And, you know, I'm willing to go through a little bit of the like gnarly thing to get to the part that's awesome. And so I think that's what keeps you going. I think once you sort of feel resigned to like, oh, there's no better way, and I give up, that's when I think you start not loving making movies anymore. So it's like, you got to find the part that's like, it's more innate. It's hard to describe. It's just kind of there.
Yeah, obviously that resonates deeply with me. No, but it's like, there's so much of this that's so hard.
Yep.
And there's also like the being fulfilled with the work itself, working in a certain way and getting the results is like an amazing, amazing thing. Zapier rhymes with happier.
It does.
But on a scale of 1 to 10, how annoyed do you get when you hear people say Zapier?
Not that annoyed.
Okay.
Like, so this could be me just rationalizing the whole thing.
That's good. Yeah. But you have to rationalize.
Yeah. But I think it's actually real, which is that it's kind of like GIF and JIF.
Yeah.
Like, it gets people talking.
Yeah,
And so to me, it's free marketing.
Yeah.
Like, we're talking about it right now. And this, I'm sure this is the only reason you interviewed me, was to tell this one question.
This one bad joke.
Yeah, exactly. So I got a whole free interview out of like a poor name. And so I think it counts.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, we're going to go to some wild card questions. What's a movie you could watch again and again?
I'm a nerd. Like, I could watch like Star Wars or Lord of the Rings, like, over and over and over.
Extended editions?
Oh, extended editions, 100%.
Yeah, okay.
Do you really like Lord of the Rings if you're not watching this?
No, if you like Lord of the Rings, you will watch extended.
Exactly.
What else are you doing?
I know.
We're going to do Date, Marry, Kill.
Oh, God.
With social media platforms.
Does it kill all?
Well, you tell me.
Yeah.
Date, Marry, Kill, TikTok, YouTube, Instagram.
I think... probably the easiest, marry YouTube.
Yeah.
Like, YouTube is just really helpful.
Yeah.
Like, you can learn anything on that thing. It's probably like the most productive platform. And it has fun too. So like you can have a good time. So like, I think you're marrying YouTube 100%. Date, kill, Instagram or TikTok. Well, I think you're dating TikTok. Like, TikTok is just like pure fun.
Yeah.
But it turns your brain to mush. It's not good for the long haul. So I think I guess you're killing
Instagram
by like process of elimination.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
What's your dream job other than this one?
Growing up, the thing I always wanted to do was be the general manager for the St. Louis Cardinals.
Okay.
Yeah. So maybe someday.
Still possible.
Yeah, maybe someday. Yeah. Maybe I'll, you know, buy a sports team and like, you know.
Sounds great.
Yeah.
Wade, thank you so much. This is a delight. Where can people connect with you?
You can find me. I'm at Wade Foster on Twitter /X, whatever it is, LinkedIn, email. I'm not that hard to find.
Awesome. Yeah. Perfect. So. Thanks, dude.
Love it.